Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSHD Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSHD Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of people affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSHD Society Radio. Welcome all to the FSHD Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here on yet another episode as we kind of dive a little deeper into a little bit maybe of what's going on in the FSHD Society and news and those things. That's later in the episode. We always like to have guests on that are directly involved with the disease, either patient or researcher or something like that. And what I love about this show is that we bring in these amazing stories of people that have this disease, such as myself, that we can kind of share a little bit of how do we navigate our lives? How do we continue to go forward regardless of it and thrive and not just survive? And today we have definitely a person that fits in that realm of someone that is goes beyond just surviving it, but thriving. And well, we're going to let him kind of get deeper into how he does what he does so well. We welcome in Mr. Chip Wilson. Hi, Chip. Welcome. Thanks for being here. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing great, Tim. Thanks so much. And I'm so honored to be here. And thank you for what you're doing to make this occur.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, this is, before we hit the old record button, I said it to you, Chip, and I've said it to others that it's always an honor for me to get this opportunity to talk to people that have, you know, the disease, of course, or researching it that I normally would not meet in my normal, you know, walk of life. So it's like almost this weird scenario where, you know, it's almost like, am I grateful that I have to have, you know, if I'm going to have a disease, at least I get to meet some cool people and make some interesting connections and conversations where if I didn't have it, I wouldn't, you know, there's no way I'd be sitting with Chip Wilson regularly, you know, if it wasn't for our common FSHD thread here. So, so those that don't know, you're obviously heavily involved with Solve FSHD, but you also are an entrepreneur. And there's so many little things that I kind of want to touch on. But first, you know, let's talk a little bit about your FSHD story. And you know, where did it all start for you? You know, when you start seeing signs of disease diagnosis and so forth?
Yeah, thanks for asking. I mean, it's in retrospect, I can see a lot more things than I would have even in my 40s or 50s now that I listen to other people's stories. When I was young, I was a competitive swimmer and quite a good one. I was maybe number two or three in the world under the age of 12. And, but I was terrible in freestyle. And, the coach kept saying, you know, as my arm would come through, my elbow would collapse into the water. And so it would drag as I was kind of coming forward on the stroke. And, you know, they worked and worked and worked on me. There was just nothing I could do about it. And, you know, that, and I never really thought much of it. I did the Ironman when I was 28 years old. And then when I got to be 32, my back was hurting a lot. And I thought it was maybe from football and, you know, falling a lot when I was, you know, skiing. You know, I started to recognize I just didn't really have very good balance. And, just genetically. So I had this like amazing athletic body from swimming where you don't really need balance. And then coming onto land and starting to do land sports and recognizing that I think people expected a lot more out of me than I could actually deliver because I really couldn't stand very well up on 2 feet. Now I could, so anyway, this is 4 years after doing the Ironman and I went in to see the doctor and I went, you know, my back's really hurting. And, you know, during the last 4 years since the Ironman, I'd really stopped swimming. I got kind of depressed to tell you the truth about my swimming. And I went, oh, I'm just aging, you know, like I can't swim anymore. I don't know what's going on. And, you know, that type of thing. And I went, well, so anyway, he has me take my clothes off and he looks at my body and I have these massive legs and this relatively spindly upper body in comparison. I mean, I'm still really good shape at that time, but the fact of the matter is probably in a matter of like a year or two, all my triceps had gone. Wow. And so he did a blood test and sure enough, I came up with FSHD. And then he told me that I probably had a bad back because he showed me the medical journal and said a lot of times this comes with a sway back, which ends up in a lot of back problems. So, it didn't mean much to me because I was in great shape, having the time of my life, super athletic. And now I've discovered with a lot of people, I went into denial, I'll be fine,
Right.
And of course, life goes on. And as life went on, I became a squash player. And then after about 20 years of squash, people just started hitting the ball over my head, recognizing that I couldn't really reach up in order to get any high balls. And so I kind of stopped doing that. And I started, climbing mountains. We're in Vancouver. So I do that for about an hour a day. And I got kind of depressed. I'm saying depressed, like from a guy that's super positive and always on it all the time. But I just don't want to go to the weight room. It's just like, I can't lift anything. So why should I go there? And I didn't really put it together with the muscular dystrophy, to tell you the truth, but my muscles were slowly going. And of course, sometimes you only need one muscle out of six in a shoulder to not be able to do anything at all from that particular muscle. And so in order to kind of like feed my ego, I think I just kind of stuck with what I could do. And that was using my legs. So I started doing a lot of hiking, like 7 to 20 day hiking tours through El Camino or the Camino Santiago Trail in Spain, those types of things, and climbing. And then it was really not until about 4 years ago, I recognized that, man, I can't reach for plates. I can't reach across the table and put up a plate and bring it back to me. I'm sleeping badly on my shoulders. There's nothing holding my shoulders together. And so I started back on the weights, and now I do like the lowest plate, like one plate, and then I'll try to do 100 reps just to keep my vascular and nerve system going trying to set up the foundation for when there is a cure, that my muscles are apt and ready to go.
So it's been a total transformation from what you were doing as an athletic swimmer all the way through Ironman. You talked about then, it's all been really highly competitive, type things, your mindset. Yeah. Does that leak into how you behave against this disease? You get a little competitive against it?
I don't know if I get competitive. I guess that's kind of fun. I never really look at it from that point of view. I look at it as I just don't let any, I don't want my mental state to ever be something that impedes my disease. Because I think there is, I had someone actually approach me on this idea that, somehow the epigenetics of my body had the FSHD be expressed. And so if you look at epigenetics being something in environment or nature or stress or something like that creates the ability for the DUX4 to kind of come out of the gene system and attack the muscles, well, then you got to think, is it possible to mentally reverse that? So, I mean, this is kind of far out stuff, but if there's a 1 in a million chance, I'm going to take it, and so I come at it from a point of view, not letting stress or negativity get in the way of the possibility of even a reverse of the disease.
Hmm. Was there any FSHD in your family? Was this passed on?
Well, none of my relatives before me have it. Not like, people you've had it before. I had two parents that had something together. When these two things came together, then I had the propensity for it. So, and none of my children have it. One of them has the indication for both of it, but then as a possibility, but then they don't have low or high methylation, which means that even though these two things are together, they won't express the DUX4.
Hmm. That's fascinating. So as far as you know, you're maybe a one-off or a,
I'm a one-off
manifestation. Yeah. Yeah.
Mutation.
Wow. Yeah. Mutation. That's it. Yes. That's interesting. Yeah. So when did you know that you had the disease before you had kids?
32. No, it would have been just at that time. I was, but I mean, my life was so incredible when I started at 32, when I was just in that space of having children, and I couldn't envision it impeding my life at all. And I, you know, we know that now, of course, that nothing changes for a while, and then it steps down all of a sudden,
right,
and takes a couple muscles, and then a couple of years and steps down. So, you know, I'd probably been through a couple of years where nothing seemed to change. I probably felt pretty good, and you know, and I probably extrapolated out to, you know, 100 and went, I can make this happen. But I really didn't see the bottlenecks of where I am now at 67. And I have, I don't have a right hamstring. I don't have a left tibia. You know, I'm missing a lot of my upper body. And so, you know I've been compensating, but someone told me it's kind of like an elastic band. It works until it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, I think I'm just on that edge right now.
Mm-hmm. And fascinating too, the way you use kind of those stair falls, so to speak, in where you have no issues, no progression, and then it takes a step down. That's kind of very similar to what my neurologist told me. You'll be good for a while, and then it's gonna take a step down. You'll take these stair falls as you go, and they become, you know, closer together as you get older, and they become more severe.
And this is the tough part about, you know, going into clinical studies for it, and why pharmaceutical companies have a hard time investing in it,
yeah,
because trying to test it is very, very difficult. What stage are you at on that step model? Nobody knows. And so, there probably then needs to be a lot more people inside a clinical study than normal clinical studies. That's just occurring to me right now for that exact reason.
Mm. Yeah, it is tough to gauge all the things you just talked about. So then your entrepreneurial spirit, talk a little bit about the buildup of your career, and then how has it led into the Solve FSHD?
Well, I started off in the surf skate snowboarding business, and then, you know, that was kind of a break-even MBA for 18 years. And then I started Lululemon with all the knowledge that I had there. And of course, it was the right thing at the right time in a rocket ship, and I knew how to do everything. So, you know, interesting enough, of course, I've been in the athletics business, and a lot of people who, you know, look at me and do some research on me from different points of view go, you probably are a lot more attuned to your FSHD because you are an athlete. You work out a couple times a day, and you can probably sense exactly what wasn't there, you know, the month before, probably a lot more sensitive to it. I've always been in the athletic business. And so even now, I'm still the largest shareholder of Lululemon, but I've now bought into this Amer business, which is Salomon and Atomic and Peak Performance out of Europe, Wilson Balls out of Chicago, and then Arc'teryx out of Vancouver. And I'm in partnership with a great firm out of China, and we've got those all going global, and it's a wonderful business to be in.
I like it that the fact that, yeah, you're in that athletic field, that there is, you took your athletic life and you kind of transitioned it to business a little bit. It's even something I try to tell my kids, you know, I'm like, okay, you're going to play a sport as long as you can, but at some point, right, the game might tell you can't, but then you still want to be around it. You still want to be in the business of athletics. And for you, you obviously chose yes.
Yeah, well, my mom, I wanted to be a phys ed teacher like my dad, but my mom said, they don't make any money. And plus, if you use, you know, a phys ed teacher, then you're around it all the time. You might get bored of athletics. So use it as your hobby. And it was probably one of the best advice you could get from a parent.
Wow. What was the biggest challenge? You talked about, I guess, biggest challenge in your business. You talked about the first company you're kind of working with, almost like a break even, I think was a term that you used. And then the next, you know, step, the next business was more of a rocket ship. You kind of knew what you were doing. So what was some of the lessons learned that helped you kind of accelerate the next time around?
Well, I think the number one thing I learned at West Beach was I, by mistake, when I started off in 1979, is I made a bunch of apparel and these kind of flowered wide baggy shorts, which at the time was quite radical because everything was quite short and tight at the time, even for men, and no one wanted to buy them. I went around to a bunch of department stores. They didn't want them, so I had to set up my own retail store. So I was designing and manufacturing and had my own retail store. So I had like two or three markups that other people didn't have. And so I really invented direct-to-consumer retailing. Kind of the analogy of it today is somebody that would go open up a business and go straight to e-commerce and not have a retail store. So I was missing a couple of middlemen, did really, really well on it.
So
that was number one thing, because I did that, you know, just to be able to understand a brand new business model that I'd never had before. And I've taken that right through to my whole life, and it's worked out really well.
What was the first, I guess, brainchild then behind Solve FSHD? Was it something you always wanted to get heavily involved with, trying to find treatments, cure, and when the opportunity presented itself? Was it that kind of situation? How did it all begin?
Yeah, it's a great story, because about maybe 8 years ago, Neil Camrata, who you've had on your show, incredible guy, used to be CEO of Shell Oil, you know, really down to earth, smart guy, you know, heard that because I came out public that I had FSHD, which you can do in Canada because it's public health. It's not like you're ever going to get, you know, like turned down for something. Right. So he came and approached me and said, look, they've got this company in the Netherlands, Fascio, and why don't you come on and, you know, invest in this and we'll get it going. Well, it was the only game in town in the whole world, it seemed like. It's the only place that really seemed to be that set up a company, you know, with a profit motive to actually get something done. So we put our money into that, and quite a bit, like $30-35 million. Wow. And we just kept going through molecule, molecule, molecule. And it's not like it is now where you've got AI and a bunch of other things to kind of help you through that kind of thing. We just couldn't reach efficacy on a lot of the things that we'd kind of come to. So things in Europe don't move as quickly as in North America, I would say. And we started to sense that things were happening in North America, and that, so we decided to shut that down. And I decided to put, like, you know, my money where my mouth was, and there's no point in dying with money. So I put up $100 million, and I said, we're going to solve this by December 31st, 2027. If we can't solve it, then can we grow our muscle back faster than it's depleting? Mm. So either one of those works for us. So we, what I think has been amazing is, just like, technology has gone exponential, and probably since 1980 or something like that, again, where it's a hockey stick, where it goes slow and then it goes straight up. I feel like we're at that inflection point for FSHD now. Again, when we started Fascio, it seemed to be the only game in the global arena. And we're probably got our fingers into 30, 35 different organizations or people that are working on FSHD now. One of our main things was when I put out the 100 million, we had some great advice, and that's go to spend $1 million on McKinsey and have them come in and do a study. Like, you know, if you had $100 million, where do you put the money to make sure you get to that goal 2027? And so it really looks at the bottlenecks. And the bottlenecks, of course, were like, what are the biometrics to be able to determine whether you're, if you get a cure, whether it works or not. We've talked about that. And the second one is, you know, are there enough people registering with FSHD? Mm-hmm. And I think we all know there's a lot more people with FSHD than are out there, but, you know, for athletes, it's really easy to see, but for the normal person who probably isn't, you know, like thinking of like working out like 2 hours a day, it probably doesn't show up the same for them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's almost like, how can we get phys ed teachers, you know, looking at young kids and go, who's the kid that's stumbling? Who's the kid that's, you know, kind of like the non-athletic kid, you know, who may not have been cool, but the reality of it is maybe they had great athletic desire, but they had FSHD at some level. And those are the people. Then how do we get those people tested right away, without any kind of like stigma around it, and have them into a registry? This is the big thing.
So education early on, kind of people noticing what's off. Maybe there's a reason for the stumbling. Maybe there's a reason why, you know, Jimmy can't do XYZ amount of push-ups, right? Not just the fact that they're simply, but how do you get that out into the more generalized, public, so to speak? Because right now, you know, this is considered a rare disease, and I'm with you. I wonder really how rare is it, because I think it's out there more, just at different degrees, and more people are affected than they realize. So, what would be the plan, do you think, to kind of, is it in the gym classes? Is it within athletics, at least start there
at a young age? This is something I brought up in the last couple of weeks, because, you know, we can have all these clinical studies, people ready to go. We can have registries, but we need critical mass of them. So, you know, I mean, you see a lot of the diseases, you know, do bus stop ads, things like that. You know, that's one thing. But I think the phys ed teachers are really low hanging fruit. Mm-hmm. And I think it's not hard to get that communication out to them. You know, whether, you know, parents are sometimes in denial and don't want to, you know, don't even want to get their kids tested. And as people get older, they kind of go, well, things are okay. You know, they're fine. You know, I'm a little bit weak and I'm not the most athletic person in the world. And they get by being a tech person or gaming or something that doesn't require a body, but more like a mental thing. And they, you know, like, it's just not important to them. So, yeah, I think phys ed teachers in elementary, probably junior high, is the low hanging fruit.
Yeah, it's because it is going to affect then how the other pieces work together, as in us, you know, monitoring those that have the disease and like getting that proper biomarker type thing set up and the natural history studies and so forth, because there's not enough people involved. And I think there's a lot of pockets of people that have it, but no one knows about it. I mean, when I was young, 12 years old and so forth, I couldn't hammer out nearly as many pushups, maybe a handful, count on one hand, you know, at a given time, and struggle, yet other kids were firing them off.
Yeah.
That to me would have been an immediate red flag for someone, but yet no one noticed anything. And then I continued on with my life till I was like 40 years old. Then I'm diagnosed. So that's a lot of time and a lot of physicals that it's kind of missing. So,
and then there's always the thing, you know, like back in the Soviet Union in the old days, you know, if someone had cancer, they'd never tell them because the negativity of that, somebody felt it worked against the person. So I can see where, you know, I can see that side of the story too. But I think if we want to get this solved, we've got to get over that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely, completely. So the goals of Solve FSHD, the 2027, you know, FSHD Society with Mark Stone has mentioned early on in his time here that, you know, 2025 would be a great marker if we can hit that as a goal for at least a treatment. You're not far off those types of goal talks of here's a year, here's something we want to, you know, strive for 2027. You mentioned getting at least the muscles to, you know, regenerate would be a great treatment plan. I'm with you on that. But yet there's also the negative side that I've heard from other people that use this similar platform of a podcast, saying that that's a bad thing to say, hey, we're saying this date, it's a marketing tool. It's a marketing tool so that you donate. It's a marketing tool so that it's out there. What do you say to that negativity for those that, you know, if it's Solve FSHD, say 2027, that's our goal marker. FSHD Society says 2025, we're trying to make that our goal. But those that say, why would you do that? That's a negative thing. Do you agree with that? And if so, why or why not?
Well, I'd say I'm an expert at goals. And the reason I say that, because I've put probably 50,000 people through goal setting and I've made a science of it. Beautiful. The thing about setting a goal for a time like December 31st, 2027, is then that the decisions I make, given the money I have and the risk, are all correlated together to determine whether to make that investment or not. Mm-hmm. So if I have something that's, 100% sure, but it's going to happen 20 years from now, I don't care.
Yeah.
Because, you know, for me personally, it doesn't do me any good. So what goals do is they force the decision process to actually make the end date goal viable. Now, people fail at goals all the time. And sure, there's, I always propose that people should fail at 50% of their goals to learn to resilience, to get smacked down and stand up and reset things. But I find in the most cases that a forced date on a goal actually has things happen.
Mm-hmm. It's a motivator, right?
Yeah. And I'd say, because I'm putting up the money, I don't care if anyone else puts in another cent. I mean, I know that I'm selfish in my motivation about having a solve. And, you know, guess what? If I solve mine, there's going to be millions of people that are going to be okay with it.
Well, that's where it's great to have this person such as yourself with the resources that you've earned to say, hey, I'm willing to put these chips on the table, because you personally would be affected, right, by a positive outcome. But you're right. We're all kind of piggybacking on you a little bit here, Chip. We're like, hey, I'm with that guy because he has what I have. And that is a huge resource, a huge resource. I'm not against goals either. So I'm kind of glad that you said that, because if I didn't have those, I feel like I'm just kind of floating around and not really understanding what I'm trying to do and how soon am I supposed to get there and so forth. And goals to me are extremely important. What's going to be some of those pitfalls, if you can see them or not, or maybe you think could be, as you try to reach those goals with Solve FSHD for that 2027 marker?
Well, I think we've talked about them. I'm getting the right biomarker. I mean, if we can get a blood biomarker, that's by far the easiest. But it seems pretty clear to me right now that MRIs is the gold standard. Yeah. Now, just because I may have an increase in muscle mass in my upper body by 12% because I've been taking umbilical stem cells, this is a fact, so this is kind of like brand new information, does that mean I'm stronger? Well, it shows up on the MRI, I have more muscle mass, but now I've just come out of Stanford with Dr. Day, who's been doing the natural history studies there, and I'm waiting for the reports back to determine whether my strength has actually gone up. Mm. So I don't have the information on that right now. I am going every quarter now to get umbilical stem cells done. And then I think there's two or three other, you know, operations like that globally that are looking at reversing fibrosis. In other words, our muscles turn to fat, and how do we reverse that stage? Or we're working with a credible operation, Dr. Badalak at the University of Pittsburgh, and they work with how to regenerate and build back military men and women who have had muscles blown up, or maybe they're missing 70% of their muscle, and then how to generate and regrow those muscles. And it's a lot of great science occurring around that.
And that piggybacks off what your efforts are of regrowing muscle. I mean, you're dipping into different resources.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing for science is that I think I'll bastardize all these kind of metrics, but you could say 70% of people die because they have a lot, they lose their muscle and then they fall and then they end up in the hospital and they die, so to speak. So, if we can if we can find a way to, as we age, to keep our muscle mass, then we could extend all lifespan by 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. Now, what's the value of a drug like that? Trillions. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of sense where there's a lot of incentive to be looking at these things.
Do you think then that instead of the fact that this could help people that are even just aging and losing muscle mass just by aging? You're saying that
I think whatever's happening with FSHD and muscular dystrophy is going to drive a lot of happiness in the world.
I like the way you say that. Yeah. So it helps others beyond just so those that carry a muscular dystrophy disease.
Right. I mean, if you looked at it from that point of view, you'd think the federal government would want to get in, and this would be, instead of putting $100 billion into Medicare over the next 10 years in Canada, which is $1 trillion in the U.S., if they just did this alone with that, because ultimately what you're really looking at for every dollar you put into Medicare is how many more minutes of life are you extending?
Right.
And this, right. I can't, this would have to be in the top 10.
And the fact that that way of pumping money that direction, as they want to do, the way the government does it, that's being more reactive, where your thought is, let's be a little more proactive.
Yeah, it's very, very tough to put medical money into proactivity because, you know, if you've got a kid that's come into emergency with a disease that takes $100 million, you know, a $5 million machine to look at, and five of them look at it a year. Well, if it's your kid, you'll be, you know, that's the most important thing in the world. But you forget, like, you know, for that $5 million and the people that are working in ER at that time, if you were to put that money into proactive medicine, would you extend more life minutes in multiple different people? Governments have a very hard time being proactive when you've got a kid laying on a deathbed in emergency. It's a big moral ethical issue.
What are you seeing then the future of, if 2027 is the larger goal? How about just within where we are now, like where our feet are now? What are your goals for just this year?
I think we probably have about 7 to 14 either in with grants or possible grants for biomarkers. Okay. That's number one. Number two is, you know, helping, you know, we kind of fund our money through the FSHD Canada in order to fund clinical trials. So getting ready for clinical trials and making sure it's just not happening in the USA, but it's happening in Canada too, because we don't want the drug to be discovered in the US and get through FDA and then spend another 5 years trying to get it through Canada. So there's that. And then it's really like looking at the different, you know, solves that are out there. And there must be, I'm thinking, 8 different ways of looking at a solve when you kind of look at, you know, the DNA and then the transfer to the RNA to the, you know, to the expression of DUX4, then, you know, into the muscle and being in the muscle and, you know, epigenetics, gene expression, et cetera. You know, you could probably say that CRISPR is the, you know, might be the gold standard, but it's also the riskiest. It's going to take the most money and the most time. So it kind of fits into the upper quadrant of, you know, and then you got to figure out, well, how much money am I going to put in that? And is that going to get solved by 2027? Well, maybe. So then how much money do you put into it? Mm-hmm. You know, on the other end are very, you know, low risk, but maybe not the best solve for FSHD. So where are we on them? I'd say we have about, maybe 20 to 25 to 35 companies that have got some kind of solution. They're either public companies or they're private companies that are about to go public. They've got some really good science, but maybe they're in SMA, spinal muscular atrophy, and they've got a test that they're doing and they need $1.5 million in order to do the test, just not for SMA, but also for FSHD, so that we can kind of double up on it. And it, you know, these are the types of things that we're doing. We're really not trying to put our money into anything which would have happened anyway. So we're only interested in putting our money where we can catalyze something or we can get something over the hump that normally wouldn't have occurred.
Sounds like a lot of work and feeling the pressure of hitting those marks. How does the team that you collected within Solve FSHD, how did that get put together? I know you talked about, you know, some pieces, but, you know, not everyone, I assume, has the disease, right? So how do you get them on board? Say, we're going to attack this.
Yeah. Well, that was the great thing about the FASIWA, the Netherlands, everybody on the board had FSHD. So it was, you know, there was a big drive to it, but science was there. We started up Solve FSHD in Canada. Neil and I both have it. And then, you know, through the McKenzie study that we did, you know, we asked for who are the top 5 executives in the world that would make this happen. And we just ended up with the most amazing person in the world, and Dr. Eva Chin, who's actually from Ontario, but, you know, has, you know, gone through academics and the business side of things with pharma companies, has taken drugs, you know, into market and has some very wide experience in muscles, had had no direct experience with FSHD, but she's incredibly smart. And of course was a quick read, and she runs it for us. And we've just onboarded another great guy, Rich Howlett, who is punches way above his weight. We're just, you know, he spent his time, you know, as a, you know, learning everything about muscles and in science, and then ended up in the business end of it. So the kind of the private equity development, business development end of it, and ended up back in Vancouver and kind of was, you know, just really looking for something to, you know, keep his mind engaged. And we're incredibly lucky to have him. And so that we, you know, we have a couple more people that are, you know, have just joined, and kind of like, because we needed people to run the grant program and just kind of keep us on board. And now we're just in the midst of our second major conference up in Whistler, where we're bringing everybody that we're funding, or people that we want to fund, or people that we think have incredible science, in order to bring the group of maybe 50 people together, maybe inside of that 30 organizations. And then our job is to, our goal is to have three collaborations occur out of this that normally wouldn't have occurred.
Yeah. It's an impressive team. If you go on the website, those that are listening, watching, solvefshd.com, you get to kind of know some of those parts and pieces, those great team members that Chip is talking about. Really implore you to visit the site for that reason and for many others. Last question for you. You talked earlier about the mental state, right, of handling the disease, hitting it with some positivity instead of kind of getting it down into the negative side. Some might come across then to you and say, well, that's a little bit Pollyanna positive. Like, this is real, right? And sometimes people think that the over-positive mindset is one of falsehood. I'm probably more of a negative person by nature, but I like to surround myself with positive people and positive things, hence changing my mindset, you know, being aware that I might lean one way, that's not going to work. So how do I go the other? But for those that are maybe recently diagnosed, what would be your advice to them to attacking that information and then moving forward?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I read a lot of things, and, you know, they'd even say that happiness is a genetic trait. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, you know, generally optimism might be a genetic trait. I mean, you know, it's, I don't know. Is it learned or genetic? It seems to be genetics has a lot to do with it. So, you know, it just may not be in people to do it. I know that I have a personality that the worse things are, the more I laugh at them, because I know that there's nothing I can do about them. You know, if I stub my toe, I'm just really being facetious, but I know the pain's coming in 3 or 4 seconds, and I hit my toe and I start laughing because I know, oh, this is really going to hurt, you know, type of thing. And I kind of look at that all through my lifetime. And I just know that, you know, being down does absolutely no good, no good. And it's a waste of my life, this life that I do have left. So then why the hell should I have an attitude like that? That's, I'm going to make the most out of every second, even if it's painful.
I think I might steal that quote, if you don't mind. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I think I need that on a shirt. You know, I mean, that is exactly right. I mean, I get in that conversation when people ask, you know, how are you doing? And they ask it in that way that I know they're asking, how am I coping with this stupid disease? You know, and I'm like, well, you know, me and pain, we're just best friends. You know, that's just how it works. You know, he just walks with me, and that's just how this is going to be. So
relative, you know, to being dead, it feels fantastic.
Another great one. That's awesome. Well, thanks again, Chip, for being here, sharing some time with us and your story and your inspiration. Appreciate it. And thank you for all the work that you're doing, pushing so hard for all of us to solve FSHD. We really appreciate that.
Okay. Take care. Thanks so much, Tim.
You bet. Wow. That is Chip Wilson, the main head in Solve FSHD. I mean, this is you. I really implore you all to take a look a little deeper into what Mr. Chip Wilson is about as a human, not just what he's doing to solve FSHD. So we're going to take a quick break, come back, we'll close up shop, maybe tell you a little bit, a little more about Chip Wilson, maybe some of the fascinating things I found out about him, and then we'll close it down. You're listening to the FSHD Society Radio Show. The FSHD Radio Podcast is brought to you by Fulcrum Therapeutics. Fulcrum Therapeutics is a proud sponsor of the FSHD Radio Podcast. The team at Fulcrum is working to develop innovative therapies targeting the root causes of genetic diseases, including FSHD. As the only company with a drug in clinical stage development for FSHD, Fulcrum is proud to support programs that are helping more people learn about FSHD and the critical need for research that can lead to new treatments. For information and updates about Fulcrum, visit their website at fulcrumtx.com. You can also connect with them on LinkedIn or follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Welcome back to the FSHD Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here, spending some time with me, and I hope you enjoyed the conversation that took place there with Chip Wilson. Before we kind of took that quick break, I wanted to really let you know that you got to check this guy out. This is just beyond even just the FSHD connection. When you go to solve FSHD, there is an area there where it's about the team, and he talked about a lot of these great people that are part of Solve FSHD. One was Neil Camarda. He's been a guest on the show for a short bit, and one of our, I think it was on our like marathon style podcast. Can't remember exactly which one. But when you go to Chip Wilson's part, there is a link where you can visit his, you know, chipwilson.com, or go directly there if you'd like. But get to know a little bit more about, you know, what he's about. And there's one area he's really about living life strong. He kind of said that with this positivity. Why do I want to waste my time? And if you listen to that part again, listen very closely in the way he changes his tone, his voice, his temperament in his voice, meaning he gets a little more direct with us. He says, why would you waste that time by being that way? Almost like it doesn't even occur to him why that would be the case. I have to digest that a little bit and start to adapt to that way of thinking, because I think it does lead to more positivity in a more matter-of-fact way. So when you go to chipwilson.com, he has on there, says, the average human lives about 40,000 days. My gift to you is this, he says, calculate the number of days you have left to maximize your potential. Then do one thing that scares you every day. Now, for some of us, it might just be simply walking to get the newspaper, or walking outside, or doing something like that. Maybe. But I think his point is challenge yourself. And then he asks you to enter your birth date and submit it and so forth. He's been on amazing podcasts in the past. Tim Ferriss's show to be one, which I'm a fan of. And Tim Ferriss gets some amazing guests on. So I was honored to have Chip Wilson be on this platform, being that I've done this, granted, a long time, and I've talked to a lot of amazing people. But Chip is definitely up there for me. Mr. Wilson is definitely up there. So you want to get inspired a little bit. You kind of want to know, hey, you know, what's in store? We don't know. You know, there's nothing guaranteed. We have no idea. All we know is that we're working very hard to get to where we have to be to fight this disease. And Chip Wilson is in our corner. And that, to me, is huge. And Vanity's got a lot of money to bring to the table, right? Of course. Worked hard for that. He's built a lot of great businesses to be where he is now, and putting his money where his mouth is. And on behalf of our community, he does so. And if you did listen, I did talk a little bit about, you know, the goal, the date. Why put a date? I have heard negativity from someone in the FSHD world that that's a bad thing. It's just a marketing tool, just to, you know, put money out there. What money is going to take to solve this? Like, get over yourself. Of course it is. We're not asking everybody to give their last dying dollar. Of course not. But give your time, give your talent, give what you can. It's going to take a collective to knock this down. And clearly Chip Wilson's done that. He's not against the goals. If anything, that's what drives him. It should drive us all. So I'm not sure where people get off thinking, hey, that's a negative thing. Okay. I don't see it that way. Never will. That's everything in my life. Sometimes my goal is just simply to get to bedtime, right? I need to get to there. But sometimes I take the advice of a dear friend of mine, mentor and coach, Mike Palmer, would tell me, just get to lunch. You got a rough morning, I tell myself, just get to lunch. And then it seems like the rest of the day kind of takes a hold. That's a goal. Goals are what we need. Goals are what drive people. Goals are what drive society and groups and teams and business and commerce. That's what it is. It's a goal. It's not over lofty. So maybe you missed fire. Maybe you didn't get it. There is some guessing within goals. There is some aspiration with it. There is some a positive thinking in it. God forbid, but you have positive thinking. And that's all laced within the goal. Of course, that's what Chip Wilson has. He's a positive person. He said it. That's why he's not scared to make that goal of 2027. That's also why Mark Stone wasn't scared to make it about 2025. We get there. I don't know. I can't see the future, but I need a goal to help drive us a little bit harder. So I wanted to key in on that for sure before anything. So how do you want to get involved too with FSHD Society? You know, people say, well, yeah, I can't always give, right? Not expecting you to, but get a part of those events and things that are happening, you know, within our community. Be a part of that and take a look at our calendar of events page on the FSHD Society, where you have Women on Wellness. You have the Care Partner Hour. You have virtual meetings and face-to-face in-person meetings with chapters. You're having Feeling Fit with FSHD. You have this radio show you can use as a platform. The FSHD University. Visit and take a look at when those are. Early onset parent roundtables. A lot of groups are getting more and more involved because they had a goal to start a group and get involved, and they've met that, and now they have a goal to solve FSHD. So thank you to Chip Wilson for being here, being part of this broadcast, part of this podcast episode. Greatly appreciate, huge honor to have him aboard. So we'll see you next time on the FSHD Society Radio Show. Y'all take care and be well.